Welcome back to What Have You. I'm Rachel Jankovic.
I'm Becca Merkel.
And it's a rainy day in March in Idaho.
Almost the end of March. We're cruising through. We're
coming up on Easter.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Yeah, here we are indeed. I feel like everyone out there should know that we're recording this on a new phone. So maybe it will be a better... I noticed last time when I sent the audio in, I was like, oh, this is real bad this time. I think it's when we were running around in Lewiston.
Yeah, that does
like
that does
over
worse.
The bridge and...
Sorry, guys, about that. But
anyway, but I really... My phone had been through a very long, very hard road wherein first the speaker stopped working. So if I was trying to listen to like speakerphone anything, mm-hmm. I had to like hold it up to my ear because it was so faint, which meant like FaceTiming my children was never possible. So I was always, it was this constant fiddle of like, hang on. Let me call you back from my laptop. Just a minute. You know, like,
yeah.
Well, then I dropped it in a toilet in Alabama and that was badly done of me. And not only that was a dark time because not only did I drop it in a toilet in Alabama, then, well, obviously you have to plunge your hand into a toilet in Alabama very quickly and then wash it with soap in the sink thinking this is probably not better
very
for
bad,
it. Not better for it.
No.
And it kind of recouped from that a little bit, but when it did, it no longer had facial recognition. So then that was, you know, like you have to type in your little code every time the screen goes dark, you're like tapping your code in again. Then we were just in New York. I dropped it, not even from a great height, just a very short height, you know, like from a chair. And that was it.
The was
screen, the screen freaked out, started like doing weird. You couldn't see anything. So, you know, anyway, so I had to do the last several days of my trip completely out of communication with anyone. Mm-hmm. So if you called or texted me during that time, Rachel, there was nothing.
I didn't know, actually.
And
I
then
called or texted the darkness.
I finally got that poor old decrepit thing replaced yesterday. So I just feel like everyone else should perhaps you're experiencing a crisper, cleaner audio today.
Becca's hoping you are. At least you're not speaking to us from a potty in Alabama. we're not doing that. So I had something that was on my mind that we have to differing levels addressed. I mean, forever. It's like, okay. this is a common, in many ways, a common theme of our life.
Okay.
But it has still come back up. I think we probably address it sort of piecemeal here and there. And okay. I was like, I think we should actually just dig into this topic
a
bit.
What is it?
Because it's come up a few times recently and it has come to my attention that there are women out there needing encouragement in this. So,
okay.
My kids right now, you guys, I have 4 children in track, 2 in junior high, 2 in high school.
Mm-hmm.
We have the 400 training running, which Lena
is
also
did. Is everyone doing the 400?
Well, the junior high kids, I don't know what they'll end up doing.
Okay.
They just started their season. But the high school, yeah, my twins are both running 400. So they're doing the 400 training with Nate, which is just killer town killer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And yesterday when I went to pick them up, it was I believe a 5 puker practice. Mm-hmm. When we went there, there were 5 different 400 runners puking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because as it turns out, the whole thing about a 400 is that it's actually a very hard race. So, and I'm saying all this because it's on my mind, but also it's a great metaphor. I ran the 400 in high school. I remember how painful it is. And the reason is because it's a long enough race. It's short enough to be a sprint, but it's an anaerobic race. And so it's long enough that what all of the training is for is to try to build up an endurance through the lactic acid kick that happens to you, because around the 300, no matter who you are, you will get, it looks like, as Nate said to Titus, it looked like an angel had hit him with a wet fish, which is, is sort of what happens. It's like all of a sudden, or my coach in high school would say the bear jumped on their back, because yeah. you just see it all of a sudden. It looks like, feels like sand is in your veins all of mm-hmm. a sudden. And that's when people stop running and then they finish looking like they're doing a really messed up walk while they feel like they're sprinting. It's truly funny is what I'm trying to say. And of course it's not, it just, the thing is it's bound to happen to you sometime when you run the 400, and it's a hilarious feeling. Now, the reason I bring this up is because having a bunch of little kids at home is very hard. And it is hard, like this kind of hard, okay. where it will hurt, it will stretch you, it will make you feel like a bizarre fool that can't make it to the finish line for some reason, that you're dragging your feet behind you and staggering around. And
yeah.
and like, it's just incredibly difficult. And when I've talked to younger moms who are in the middle of that, and in some ways I'm still in the middle of that, but not, it's a unique phase when they're all little.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. it just is a unique, and partly because you're younger too, you're being made into a person oh, who yeah. can handle this.
Oh, yeah.
But the reason I'm bringing this all up is because it has come to my attention again that it might just be time for us to talk about this, like, what things God actually has to work out of you in that phase where you are realizing you're really up against your own finitude with what you're trying to do, what you meant to do, okay. what you physically can't do, what you're like. Basically, what I was wanting us to talk about is the idea of raise the bar by lowering the standard. The reason I'm thinking about this, Becca, I can see I still need to give Becca more background for why I'm talking about this.
I'm
She has that faraway look like she's still waiting for me to bring up a subject to talk about.
No, you remember in water skiing, people who do the dock start?
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm still standing here on the dock.
She's waiting for this boat to pull her off.
The slack has not yet been taken out of the rope yet, so...
Okay, so what I'm trying to say is, however, that we talk all the time to women where we're wanting to encourage you guys, all of you in all of your homes, to be raising the standard, to be trying harder, to like make a pie and make bread and make your home beautiful and invest in, you know, meals and in caring what you're, you know, like we're mm-hmm. very pro. Yes. Very pro women digging in. But often one of the things that has come up multiple times recently with me talking to other people is the pitfalls that attend that being something that we have not talked about as much, like where you're thinking, oh, I want to make this, I want to feed my children good food.
Right.
And, but actually being unable to just embrace the taco time party pack.
Okay.
The like time where you're like, it reminds me of the What's Up Doc. We're gonna make it. We're gonna make it. We're gonna make it. We're not gonna make it. That moment of like, we can do it. We can do it. We can do it. It's not happening. But not having that be a personal crisis that you couldn't make it, or that you couldn't, that there are seasons where you should not be bothering to make homemade bread. You should just be lowering the bar
sure.
significantly on yourself.
But that would be because you are seeing what is more important. And if you're like, I'm not making homemade bread because you don't understand how many selfies I have to take during the day. You know what I mean? Like, there's definitely people who are being really
self-absorbed. This is maybe a little bit more personal, because I actually think that neither of us struggle with this. So
with which?
Like, what I'm saying
taking
is...
Taking a bunch of selfies during the day?
Well, praise the Lord, we've dodged that bullet. That's not the one I was talking about, though. The one I'm talking about is I actually think neither of us we're prone to despair when we didn't get something done exactly the way that we wanted to, or felt like, now that I've learned to can, we must never purchase a can of beans again. Or now that I do this, this is the new standard and I'm obligated to do it. And now I feel like I'm stuck in a moral obligation to be making homemade bread.
Oh, okay.
So I think what I'm trying to say is, I don't think either of us are vulnerable to that. So it's not a thing that we talk about often, because it wouldn't occur to me. I don't know if what would not occur to me is to say, you should do it. You should make homemade bread. And then it would not come to my mind right away to say, don't get enslaved to that. Don't start thinking it, because I myself love making homemade bread and yet have gone on many a sabbatical because I couldn't pull it off and never once felt guilty that I wasn't doing it.
Yeah, that's true.
So to me, it's like, to me, I talk about it just positively, because I don't have any lived experience with getting myself into a real angst about the how impossible this is to keep up with. Because if it started to be that way, I would just, maybe what I'm trying to say is, when the ship is sinking, I don't struggle at all with chucking stuff I do like overboard.
Sure.
We'll get a new one. We'll do, I'm like, whatever. I mean, of course, I care about beautiful meals on the table, and I think that that's my job. And I don't feel guilty about the DiGiorno when that happens. Sure. And I don't care that sometimes it's like, you're going to have to find something you wanted to put on toast. I don't feel any kind of like, oh no, look, I failed. I'm not saying I never could, because I know Luke has definitely had to talk me out of a spiral of doom about my performance. But it's not, we talk very positively about things that we want to encourage people to do. Mm-hmm. And neither of us have the personality that feels like this is a burden. To us, it feels like...
I'm not sure, though. Okay, I'm struggling to capture what is the person you're talking to, the hypothetical person who is not me.
Uh-huh.
What is this person doing as they're struggling with it? Are they getting mad? Are they getting depressed? What is this person doing that you're trying to warn them out of?
Okay, so here's an example. Here's just an example from my own life. When would I chuck a bunch of things that I otherwise think matter and I would be doing? When I was pregnant and morning sick, or when I was later in a pregnancy and so tired that I had way less energy. So if you're not sleeping through the night, but somehow you're like, but come what may, I have to be making sourdough, and you're sobbing in the kitchen trying to make bread so that your kids can eat something for breakfast. Sure. You're like,
it's like, go buy the Wonder Bread.
You know what we need here is a Pop-Tart. This situation is crying out for Honey Nut Cheerios.
No, that's
this
true.
And so I'm not saying this to people who, I'm not putting on the table here, people who are not taking responsibility for their duties, people who don't care to be excellent in homemaking. I'm actually bringing it up for those of you who are very sincere in your efforts to want to glorify God with your home, glorify God in what you're doing,
right?
But that somehow you don't think that you're allowed to stop doing some of the glorious things because you're not able to do it all right now.
So I was speaking sometime recently to a bunch of women, and that was one of the questions. Because the thing I was focusing on is how potent it is when women are giving themselves to this and digging in and becoming excellent and all this stuff. And somebody said they did ask
like burnout, essentially.
Well, it was more what about kind of seasons in a woman's life where you might have a ton of little children at home or whatever? And it was yes, absolutely. Because, and what I was saying is, look, I'm speaking very broadly about women as a category.
Right.
And not every single thing I'm saying applies to every single individual person. There was a whole stretch in our life. We had five kids under six, and a remodel that meant we basically didn't have a kitchen that was functional, and who knows what other chaos going on. There was a stretch where it was like, we're just not doing hospitality right now. This is not the phase that we're in. And
yeah.
The problem is like, if I said, and therefore, nobody's allowed to talk about hospitality, or it will make me feel bad, and you're not taking me into account. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, no, of course, hospitality is commanded, and I knew that we need to get there again. But I'm also not going to feel like guilty that I'm okay, in a moment where I can't do that right now.
The fact that you've lived through that, and I think when the twins were little, for me, we maybe had people over once every 3 or 4 months, maybe. That's not counting, like, maybe mom stopped by or maybe somebody. I don't mean, like, we didn't show any kind of hospitality, like offering a coffee to someone or something. I'm sure I did that. But I mean, like, let's have a family over for dinner.
Right.
Was very, very rare. And that was a time when I felt like I was swimming so frantically in one of those little pools that has a current.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where you are like, seriously, for the fact that my whole life is in a space the size of a hot tub, I cannot reach shore. I know that you're like, and dawn I rise, and I go, and I go, and I go, and I go, and I still can't reach it until Luke finally says, just go to sleep now. I'll keep your head above water while you sleep for a minute. And then we're up all night with children, we're having chaos, the next day begins, and you're like, we still can't win. Like, it was so intense, and that's why I was talking about the 400, is that I'm saying, once you've done it, I have a lot of affection for the pain that my children are going through and a lot of nostalgia about it. But I have more for when you're talking to these women who, and I'm just saying, I'm just going to assume that a lot of you listeners are there in some way or another, that God has blessed you with a ton of responsibility in your little people. And as He's given you an increasing vision for your home, you can rush your fences and try to take things on that actually is going to be a much longer term process of you dabbling in this and just blessing your family in little bits and little bits until things start coming together at a different time in your life. Like, if someone had told me, and we haven't told people this, we have not told people you have to host a Sabbath dinner, whatever phase you're in. But when we talk positively about a Sabbath dinner, or when I talk about big hospitality, I'm right now like a good, 12 at least, probably 12 years out from that time when it was so breathless and hard.
Well, and I do think that there's the funny ditches on all sides, because there was that stretch of time where it was like, you know what? We're just not in the hospitality season right now. And then if I had taken that moment, which I think was very valid, and then said, therefore, I just never have to show hospitality again.
Or I'm not that kind of a person, so I'm not going
to
do it.
It's like, no, you have to be able to understand that there comes a time when you have to pick it up again. Like, you do need to, like, this is a command to Christians, not just to the elite Christians.
Well,
you know, it's just
totally.
But at the same time, there are moments where, you're just trying to get through some even more basic things than that.
Yeah.
And I think the key is to not be ridiculous and unrealistic and absurd with expectations when it's clearly impossible, coupled with not then taking that as the reason whereby you never have to try in the future.
You know what I mean? But I think that there's a lot of you. This is the people that I'm wanting to talk to. So one of the things that Luke and I will laugh about my personality.
Okay.
And the reason Luke and I laugh about it is because Luke and I are actually very similar. We have very similar personalities. Yeah. This is a divergent point where we are not the same. For me, when I am in the most pressing, difficult, I can't get this done, I can't, like, I am flailing around at things, the thing that feels like opening the windows, getting a better view, clear in the air, is the big vision.
Yeah.
So I will feel wildly encouraged and incentivized in no way that makes rational sense. Like, I could be having a time of doom about what I can't believe I have to figure out about the laundry again, and how do we get into this situation or whatever is happening. That's just a random example. And if someone said, what do you think we start a whole new program where they will require many hours of work from you that you don't have. And yet, that is the thing that would make me, yes, 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 just give me a second. I'll snap this thing together with the laundry.
Hilarious, because I am exactly.
Oh, yeah. Exactly no, because that. For instance, you could be like, then I have this bathroom, I have to do whatever. And if he was like, but Becca, could we sculpt our own crown molding in the backyard? You'd be like,
yes,
head cleared. No. Subject. So for me,
because if it was sort of like I'm in the pits of despair over the laundry, and you were to suggest that we plant a lavender garden and install the
and why don't we look into the best kind of fence?
It'd be like, yes.
Yes. So, yes. But this is the reason I'm saying this, and the reason I want to bring this up is because I actually think that this is a place where we don't have a natural intuition with our own listeners.
Yeah, maybe.
And I'm saying this because I think both of us are very aware of the feeling where we see women not caring to try, and we want them to care to try.
Yeah.
But both of us also experience caring to try as a great energizing source.
Well, it's very funny because I do think that I am inspired by, honestly, more like intellectual academic ideas about something.
Mm-hmm.
Gets me so fired up to go like actually make something
before
or actually
we ever
whatever.
Podcasted. You and I, that's how we would talk on the phone and do exactly that. Like the thing that you're revving yourself into. Now, I think it's just one of those things, like this is like a safety warning that we don't always tell people. Like it's kind of like we are saying, try this at home.
Yeah.
But both of us have husbands who would tell us to rig it in if we were getting too extra, getting extra beyond what he cared to participate in.
This brings up how my husband refused to allow me to purchase something called IcanMakeShoes.com.
And he was thusly like, Ben spared us all something.
Because then Ben was like, well, A, then we'd be a person, we'd be the people wearing those shoes. And he's like, and then also, sort of like, I think we can pay people to do that.
And that's how Ben crushed her dreams. Crushed them.
Oh, I know. Oh, and,
okay,
really
so a basic principle that we have had. I actually should say one of the things that Luke just flat out forbade. was mosaic making because we were having at the time too much failed pottery. Because we were making our own pottery in the garage, and we were coming out with stuff that was no good at all. But the glaze might be a pretty color.
And you wanted to repurpose it into
it. I was like, okay, what if? I think it just, I don't know. I can't remember what it was. I don't know if it was some kind of a mosaic situation, though, where I was like, well, we could just crush this. And he was just like, Rachel, he's like, listen to me. This far I go. He's like, we can buy the clay. We can try to make a mug. We can bisque fire the mug. We can glaze the mug. If we fire it the second time and it's bad, we're done. He's like, at that point, I will go no further with this mug. We're going to throw it away. Like, what we're not going to do is crack it up and start making mosaics that we don't want. Out of the mug that we never meant to make.
Waste not, want not. Rachel, you could have.
I'm like, we could have had a whole garden full of stepping stones that were made out of our failed pottery, but Luke said no. He didn't want it.
You could have taken to Farmer's Market and sold your mosaics.
I was going to be awesome, but my husband stopped me.
Well, you could have sold your mosaics and me with my homemade shoes.
And I could do a side of my disobedient wife fire starters, which is, I, you know, one of my other things that I, one of my other businesses that Luke forbade. It wasn't going to be a business. It was just going to be a let me roll toilet paper tubes and wax paper and dryer lint for you, my love. And he said, I do not like this. He's like, let me buy my own fire starters like a man if I want to, which I don't think I do. Keep your repurposing of the dryer lint to yourself.
I think we're discovering that Luke doesn't like all the odds and ends of the buffalo.
He doesn't mind that in other situations. Oh, I think he minds
that's
it.
So funny.
He minds it when his wife is getting off into the deep bushes, not paying attention to the general mission anymore.
Yeah, no, it's true, because you could easily find yourself in a cascade of fire starters.
And now we have more fire starters than we need, so who can I start gifting these weird fire starters to?
But the laundry is still sitting there.
Okay, I bring this up, though, because I'm saying that this is a safety warning about what we're admonishing people to do.
All right.
That neither of us have really ever needed, both by personality and by husband awareness, and also by the fact that I think we both grew up with this being the default mode of our home. And because of that, one of the things that's like a common background theme is that it should be, and that if I was working outside of the home, it ought to be an overflow that my focus was the home and it's an overflow. Now, we very naturally put hospitality in an overflow category for us also. We don't think it's an unnecessary overflow.
Right.
We think it's necessary. And there were times that, however inconvenient, we knew the Lord had called us to hospitality. Yeah. It didn't matter. It was like, this is God's override. He's saying, I don't really care that you have a lot going on. This is clearly what you need to do. But we didn't go out trying to embark on hospitality when we were
gunnels under.
Right. When we were like really floundering and not sleeping well and having, you know, whatever. Yeah. We weren't thinking then what we really need to do is more than survive. Yeah. And I think
what you're saying is that before you go out on a run, make sure that you've tied your shoelaces.
We don't
always think to mention that part, is what you're saying.
I think it's more than running your shoelaces. I think it's more about, this is not a sprint. Like this, your work in the home, Lord willing, will be over many years, like a half a century at least, right? Of a woman in her home.
Sure.
And it's not, you don't have to get it all done in the first, like, you want to be a woman who's always working towards something that's really beautiful and lovely. Yeah. Now, I do want to say this, just because I think it matters here, that social media has impacted this in a big way, because it has captured many women's imaginations of what it ought to look like, and it never will feel like what it ought to look like when what you're, you have some beautiful ideal and you should be aiming for it and it is real. It's just that it will happen in the real world where it doesn't feel like what it looks like.
Yeah, it won't be perfectly framed. It won't have that little soundtrack in the back. It's not like...
Oh, I have an example of this. Really a good one too.
What is it?
Spring break. The spring break.
Yeah.
We went to the Oregon coast for a week. Not a week. However long we were there. 5 days. Whatever. And I started in high school a English paper pieced quilt. that is hexagons, little hex.
Was that high school?
I was in high school. That? Yes, because
that's I crazy.
I know. I saw it in a book. I know for a fact.
After you graduated from college.
No, I know for a fact.
Crazy.
That I saw it in a book.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's cool.
Yeah.
And I took forth on that endeavor.
Right.
And a hand-pieced baby quilt.
Okay.
I remember Joyce Gray looking at it.
Okay.
And me laughingly, because just to be clear, just so funny, laughingly saying, yeah, maybe I'll get it done in time for a grandbaby.
Yeah.
I don't have any grandbabies on the immediate horizon, but let me tell you, they're probably closer than that baby quilt is. So I started this thing with one inch paper pieced hexagons. Yeah, yeah. Well, every once in a blue moon, I crack it back out because it's like handwork. So it's like something, and I took it a couple of years ago on our spring break. And then this year I was like, oh, I need something in the car, whatever. I pulled it out. So I take my potentially for a grandchild hand-pieced quilting with me on spring break. Mm-hmm. Well, here we are in a beautiful house with a beautiful big windows looking out on the beautiful ocean and the sunny day, and it's just everything about it. And I had my little quilt heirloom. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to be an heirloom.
Yeah.
You know, good. Like, yeah, whatever.
It will be.
And what happens but my teenage daughters pick it up and start helping. They start, and it was like I was doing a puzzle.
Yeah.
And they were like, I'll try. You know, like, they jumped in to do it. Super idyllic.
Yeah.
The sun is streaming in the windows. Yeah. I have four teenage daughters who are coming alongside me to help make an heirloom for some unknown generation of children. And here, in one way, nothing that beautiful has ever happened to me. And it's totally accurate. Like, the essence of something killer beautiful was amazing. But at the same time that really is what's happening, at the same time is the fact that something has happened to the finish of this table in this house that has made it sticky. And there is nothing I hate as much as a table that sticks to your forearms.
It's true.
In my life, I really mind that texture. It's something that just... It annoys me because you want to be working on a table and the stickiness upsets my sensibilities.
I'm going to say one worse than that is people who have vinyl tablecloths over it, and that's sticky.
And that's sticky. That's also one, wounded that's, me as a child somewhere.
Yeah, I remember that as a child. Yeah. That was a real grievance.
So the stickiness of some kind of failed table finish is happening. The sun is streaming in the windows, which is beautiful, but also making it stuffy. Like, we're also having a weird stuffiness.
Yeah.
There's kind of some sand on the floor situation.
Yeah, of course.
The kind of crumbs, the sand. The things are not... It turns out, if people get into your hand sewing project, and even if you desperately want them to so do, they are going to move your scissors where you can't get at them.
It's
and
true.
They are going to do things in a different order.
And you might have hay fever.
And they're
the going
to leave a popcorn bag in the middle of the table that's not the way you felt like it should have gone.
No.
And all of a sudden, there's all these things that are actually also real at the same moment.
Yep.
And you could easily, I feel like I'm hardened enough to this factor in life that I found it funny at the moment. Like, look at the most beautiful thing that's ever happened in my whole life to me and how amazingly realistic it is right now with all the things that didn't feel idyllic or like the background music is soaring. But here's why I bring this up. Could I have framed that whole story in a way that would make everyone think that there actually are no troubles in my life anymore?
Oh, I know.
Like, well, see, you have been my lovely young daughters here helping me with the handcrafts for the heirlooms of our family? For it's all I ever dreamed.
But see, here's what I always laughed about when when people would ask us if we enjoyed our time in England. And it was like, yes, of course we did. We loved our time in England. It also made us very patriotic, because it just depends on how you decided to frame the story. Like,
totally.
we could have told the story of our time in England such that it sounded like the most unbelievably majestic time that anyone's ever had. You know, like, you know, just really fun, like, incredible opportunities that, like, you would never get here. Like, Ben and I were invited to go, I don't even know why, we were at a private viewing of some of Michelangelo's sketches, you know, in this museum, and there's only like a dozen of us, and we get to do like this private viewing. You know, we could have told the story of one long series of that, you know, like
I actually feel like we don't probably have time to go on a big detour, but I do want to say you were invited to something that was black tie. And you had you got a beautiful dress, but for whatever reason, you were horrifically sunburned, and your sunburn began peeling while you were at a black tie formal in a black dress that was flaking her shoulder skin all.
You guys, it was the best.
But that's a metaphor for all of it.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is like, we could, yeah, that was at Blenheim Palace. We were invited to Blenheim Palace for canapes and champagne.
Becca shed her shoulders.
Yeah. Champagne and canapes in the orangery of Blenheim Palace. And so we go to this thing, and it was, we were packing to move home, and so everything was crazy. And we had taken Knox. We would always take him on his birthday. We would go to Warwick Castle. And we had gone to Warwick, and it was like the end of May, and so I was wearing a sleeveless shirt, and I had gotten kind of pink, but it wasn't like an extreme burn. It was like you got kind of pink. And this was like 2 days later, and I'd forgotten all about it. We're packing to move home, and so I was so busy, and it was like we had to go to this thing in the evening. So I, like, at the end of the day, jump in the shower, scrub myself off with one of those like little like loofah things, throw on my black sleeveless dress, and then we drive to Blenheim, and Ben and I get out. He's wearing his like black tie, like he's, it has to be in his tux. And so we start walking in, and I was like, what's all over your jacket? And then it was like, oh my gosh, I'm molting. I'm completely molting. It's like my arms, I don't have a wrap. I have nothing. I have sheets of skin coming off everywhere, and there's nowhere to hide it. And so it was so funny. And then they had a photographer the whole evening going around taking pictures of everything. And I was so killed by that whole episode that I wrote them afterwards, the people at Blenheim. And I was like, you know, I know you had a photographer. Is there any way I could get a picture? Because I really wanted a picture of me with weird dandruff shoulders. And then they wrote back and sent us a picture. And they had cropped it to just our heads. I'm sure they were like, oh, dear. Well, so they credit down.
Okay, but I want to anyway, say, I want to say that this is an example of like, God gives you an opportunity to go to Blenheim Palace. You're like, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's so fun. Let's do it. You do try to have a formal. You do try to be ready. Yeah. But when God also sends you shedding shoulders, you have to think, this is deluxe and funny, and I'm not going to lose all of my grip about this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not... We can still enjoy the gift that God gave us.
The thing is, it's kind of like if we had decided to tell everyone about our, like, imagine we had social media back then, which we didn't, but, you know, we could have made ourselves look like we were having nonstop eleganza times, you know?
Right.
And, you know, Ben's incredible college that he was a part of and the dinners we would go to there and being served wild boar and this and that. And we could have made it all sound like that. Mm-hmm. Or we could have decided to be fussy, complainy, and ungrateful and only tell the story of England with horrible traffic, impossible to park. You have to walk everywhere. Nothing is, you know, like, you could have just fussed about that. You could have spent all the time talking about the way you got stuck on the side of the road at the welcome break because the, you know, car troubles. And then, you know, like, you really could have just told the story as one big inconvenience after another. Or you could have decided to tell it as if there had never been an inconvenience at all.
Right, and the thing that you ought to try to do is tell the truth. And to not, if you're in some vignette where telling the truth is impossible, because you shouldn't tell the backstory to a situation and the front, you know, like, however, like, and when I mean the truth, you know what I'm saying. I'm not saying everyone needs to know everything, but don't be deceitful about how things are happening.
Right.
Right. And if you're in some situation like where I can't, we'll stop posting it on Instagram.
Stop it.
Stop doing that. And don't, I'm like, I want this to be encouraging to those of you who are young mothers and going through times that actually are very physically demanding and draining. And if you're listening to our podcast and you're like, I'm not even close to trying to do whatever thing we maybe are talking about doing.
A paper pieced quilt.
Yeah. Or whatever thing we maybe are talking about. You have to recognize both of us really enjoy the thing that's way outside of our grasp, because that is the carrot for us.
Absolutely.
But don't ever let the thing that seems way out there be chasing behind you, where you are fearful for your life because you're not achieving something.
That's a great way of putting it, because it is true that you want to be like running towards something, not running away from the
missing
guilt.
And for me, I really love that, like, we do, there is an advantage that we have. And I've said this before when someone was asking me about how hard it was to be puking all the time when I'm morning sick. I have a big advantage in the people that are around me, in my own family, in my husband, that there would be zero tolerance about a big complaint had I tried to do that. So even though it's not my personal biggest temptation to do that in the first place, I feel like I'm not overly inclined that way, but I also could never have developed the habit due to the people that are around me.
Sure.
So some of the things, we just don't think of what an actual hazard that is for people.
Because
it's like not on my radar, because it's not a thing I had to be worried about. So because I love pursuing the thing out there that I think is like this domestic vision of how I want our house to be.
Right.
I love pursuing that, and it doesn't discourage me from running that it's still ahead of me.
That
to me is like, I know that. Like, and so sometimes they hear the way that we talk about it, and they think that we're, and I know this to not be the case, that we are telling people we have arrived at this.
Oh gosh.
But at the same time, fact that we're even talking about those things or enjoying it, they have some idea that we, because we say learn to make a pie, that we must make pie every Thursday night for our families.
Right,
and we are a long way away from doing that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, do I make many side dishes with every meal? No, I do not.
Yeah.
Like, do I, you know, like the standards that I'm very comfortable with in my own home are not probably what many of you have filled in the blanks on to think is the way we're usually going about our life.
Right.
Like, there are a lot of nights where what I'm feeding my children is some smorgasbord of things I could come up with rice.
Oh.
Like, what's in the fridge combined with what could I put in a random pasta if I have enough of that random pasta left over?
To a spree where it's like, you know what? For 3 days in a row, I have been in a weird scramble with no plan, and we ended up ordering pizza, and now, you know, like,
But the thing is that neither of us talk about that very much. I mean, I know we do, but we don't talk about that often because it is not motivational to either of us.
No.
And if you're not feeling chased and oppressed by this thing that you're aiming for, there's absolutely no reason to not keep talking about the things that we're aiming and, for and the progress we're making and what and we love doing.
And it's true that that is the thing that's inspiring to both of us, I think. But yes. It's also like when you get, at least for me, if I get bogged down in the, like, everything feels stuck and dusty and greasy and I can't ever get anything sorted out anyways.
This is where we match.
What would make me feel better
would be if I cleaned out some of my fabric scraps, which is not one of my problems, and began making a quilt that I never meant to make. It's just like, oh, well, let's just look at the big view. Let's look ahead. Let's keep going. And all of a sudden I have clarity and encouragement for the things that feel like a grind.
Yeah, sure.
That is how it is to me.
And for me, it would maybe just be like, okay, I'm going to back this whole thing up and I'm going to think about the really big picture and the really big goals and the things that are actually way further out to me than just, we'll just get the Windex then and go wipe it off if it's greasy and sticky. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's a far more achievable goal, but somehow picturing the really big importance of the thing, that's what would motivate me to be like, oh, you know what I should do is grab the Windex and
Exactly. Because I start doing all of that stuff while I'm occupied thinking about big stuff. One of the things, the reason I said at the very beginning, raise the standard by lowering the bar, is that if you're aiming for big things and you want a beautiful home and you want to glorify God in your home and you want to be better at being a homemaker and you want to start making things that will be heirlooms and you want to, you know, like, and you have all these goals, don't be discouraged by the seasons where you have to just lay them down and not worry about it for a little while. Like, because you're still hopefully have another 45, 60, however many years of this.
And that's the thing. It's like the season where you just can't cope with being hospitable right now.
You'll get around to a season where you can.
And make sure you do. That's the thing. It's like,
well, I think the thing that our culture is bad about is that if you can't do something right now, we want to say there's nothing good about it.
And also, nobody can talk about it.
Stop acting like that's a good thing. You know, stop talking like that is. And we don't want to do that. But I also just am saying to a lot of you young moms out there, the standard that you have to raise is your joy, your peace. And this is don't be thinking, like, accept the things that God is giving you to glorify Him with, which includes your fatigue, your exhaustion, your whatever. Instead of thinking God is not, like, instead of thinking God is supposed to supply you with what it takes for you to offer to Him what you wanted to offer to Him. Like, He always supplies you with the grace that you need to actually honor Him, but He doesn't always supply you with the energy and the time and the bandwidth to, say, sew the toddler's Easter dresses.
Right?
Like, you don't, and you're like, but you don't understand. I was going to glorify God by doing this beautiful deed that was going to happen. And then I, you know, like, you, it's easy. It is really easy to swap out what God actually wants you doing with what you want to do for God.
Yeah.
And
always.
And to just be like, we have a plan, Lord, and you're not helping correctly. And it's like not the way that it.
Right.
It's not the way it goes. So for all of you who are young moms and feeling the burn of, like, having a bigger vision for your home but feeling like you can't get there, be patient. Like, think of it in terms of, like, you know, I have a floor loom right now. I wanted to buy a loom. I think I made a push thinking that it would be a good use of some of our wedding money. It wouldn't have been. And then you take that and you're like, it was a good 12 years or something of me wanting to get a loom before I ever got to a place where we the time, the bandwidth to try that.
Oh yeah.
Then it was a many year process of that loom of very slow progress and learning and getting a little better here and there. Like, I'm on like a 25 year plan with that loom. Well, like, I think
anything that's worthwhile doing, it turns out there's so much, like, learning curve to any of it that you are never going to just be an immediate master at it. Mm-hmm. If it's something you can be an immediate master of, like, for instance, AI generated art, then I think that that's probably, you know, like any person could sit sure. down and type in the prompts.
Sure.
You know, that's probably a signal of, like, what kind of level of craftsmanship are we talking about, too? Like, the things uh-huh. that really are worthwhile in terms of handing things down or creating a really
right.
impressive space, it is always the kind of thing where you have to practice and be bad at it and learn and figure it out and throw that away and just try it again.
Give yourself, I think I gave myself 5 years to figure out sourdough, and I probably took it all. You know, like, it took me a long time. And this is the thing that I really want to say. We say this about Christmas, that just because something, you did it 1 year and people enjoyed it, does not mean you have to do it every single year for it to be a tradition.
Right.
When you make delicious homemade bread, it is no less delicious homemade bread because the kids also have to eat store-bought bread in a lot of intervals. Yeah. The fact that there's a rhythm of mom makes amazing roast chicken, but she also buys rotisserie chickens.
Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah. You can do it all. You're allowed to do the full spectrum. And you just juggle those things, and with an eye to the distant future, not just the immediate future.
Yeah.
And all of this reminded me, because I'm like, this episode will go out before Easter. So sometime the year that I was fat after having had the twins in November, and then it was Easter. And not just fat, but literally a physical train wreck from having had the twins. Didn't fit a clothes that I can recall. And mom just trying to be the rah-rah can-doer bought me a skirt at Ross, I think, that did go onto my body. But that was the only thing it did for me. That was it. It got on. But I think it was probably the least flattering of all possible skirts. But there was no chance to think twice about it, you know? It had to be done. And it was the same year that I was nursing the twins on the couch in our living room. So both arms are involved in nursing the twins. And Luke was playing with balloons with the other two toddlers and swung a Melissa and Doug broom at the balloon really hard. And the head, the wooden head of the toy broom, disembarked from the handle that he was holding. Just ripped across the living room and beamed me in the eye. And so I had monster black eye. Now, Luke is a lot bigger than me. So if you ever want to know about a moment that will make you feel awkward, feel your least physically put together you've ever felt in your life, the most touched you've ever been in your life with nursing twins and never sleeping. I mean, sleeping was not a thing that happened, except for when I woke up in the laundry I was trying to fold. That kept happening. And then give yourself, at this fatal moment of feeling that way, a huge black eye and a husband who's much bigger than you, so that everyone thinks he's a criminal. You go out with your two babies and your two toddlers and a big black eye, and you find out that everyone is like, oh no. Like, it was terrible. Mm-hmm. That Easter, Luke told me, he wrote me a note that was, I believe, was entitled something like, to my wife before she even goes near her closet on Easter. Maybe don't have it anymore, but I wish I did. And anyways, in that, he said, there is no more glorious way to celebrate Easter than in a body that has been undone on behalf of others. And I will tell you that that still is very pertinent every year that goes by. And so if you are a young mother out there who's feeling like it is not altogether for Easter. Your kids' outfits are not together. You didn't make beautiful baskets. You can't get a grip. Yep. You do care. You want to celebrate. Like, think about this. This is the best possible way that you can celebrate, is being joyfully undone in Christ.
Totally.
Like,
totally.
You belong to Him, and He can conquer all of this. And you don't need to conquer it on your own to prove that you don't, you know, whatever. Just be fat with a double black eye and a skirt that doesn't flatter you, and wear your sunglasses into church and don't make any comment on it.
Possibly have your shoulders flaking at the same time.
and serve your family Pop-Tarts for Easter breakfast because you just couldn't do the other stuff.
And they'll be happy. They'll be thrilled.
And the thing is that if you're in Christ, it's not about our achievements. It's not about, it's about, of course, living as a living sacrifice, offering things to God. And a huge part of the time in my life, and I assume in all of yours, it's offering the things you would rather have not offered to God and saying, well, Lord, it appears that this is what you want. So here it is.
Here it is.
So anyways, I'm telling you all, don't be discouraged. Go into Easter like people who actually belong to Christ, are actually free from burdens of these things. And those things you can do to bless your family, do them freely and joyfully and givingly, but not because you feel like something's chasing you.
Yes, exactly.
That's oppressing you into it, but because there's something beautiful that you want to express in your work.
That's great.
There we go. We got to that very long podcast. It took me so long to pull back off the dock there. By the time we got skiing, we'd used up a lot of time.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, happy Easter,
everyone. Happy Easter. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.